Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is a podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail? A sitting president sleeping on cash, literally. A cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail. Or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do.
Can you confirm that delivery performance has dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. On April 18, I jinxed someone. In fact, it was more of a curse than a jinx. In the run-up to the elections, I hosted several politicians, some new, who were gunning for your vote and had plans for the country. One of them was one Vuyiswa Ramokgopa of Rise Mzansi. I must confess, I invited her not because I was so much interested in Rise, because I knew enough about Rise. And no, it was not because I wanted to suss her out. I suspected, though, that she was coming with some ticket of nepotism, yet another Ramokgopa in our political landscape. I was wrong. I have to say so myself. I mean, I was completely impressed. She felt and smelled like it, man. She was going to do some amazing stuff. She painted a picture of what needed to be fixed and how, particularly in Gauteng, where she was aiming to be premier. Well, she did not win your vote to be premier. But enough of you voted for her to get a seat in the Gauteng legislature, which is why and where my case comes in. So if Banyaza prevailed and you didn't make it, and came to you and said, Nasi Spani, what did you say?
I would say no thank you, because I know that my contract will end just after elections.
As it happens, Gauteng Premier Banyaza Lusufi picked up that phone and made that call and offered Vuyiswa Ispani. And today, my dear friends, I present to you the newly minted MEC for Agriculture and Rural Development in Gauteng Province, Miss Vuyiswa Ramokgopa. Disclaimer. She's now MEC, right? She doesn't have time. So, you know, she's only offered me 30 minutes because she has to be in her blue lights and go and do some free lunches and cut some ribbons and stuff like that. So we're going to try and get this thing done so that we allow the politicians to go do political stuff. Hello, MEC.
Hello, Rams. I don't know whether I'm happy to be back in this seat, but I am in stitches. Thank you very much for having me back.
How does it feel to be called it? MEC.
It's definitely a change.
Yeah.
I think the first day somebody was referring to me and said MEC, and I didn't know who they were talking about. You know, I was kind of like oblivious that they were talking about me, and then I realized, oh, okay, yeah, I'm being discussed. But no, I think it's...
You've got to be called there. That's what government does. Your name falls away, you become MEC.
But for the purpose of this discussion, please feel free
to
use my name.
I feel like I should dress up for you. Pity this is not a visual podcast. People should see I'm dressed up for you today.
Please feel free. Vuyiswa is my name that my parents gave me lovingly, and I respond positively to it.
So first and foremost, my apologies for the jinx.
Let me say you had a premonition, and I think you saw into the future what many of us, even at that time, could not foresee.
Damn it, we can end this now. This is beautiful. Oh, God, I'm so good. I'm feeling great about myself. But on the bright side,
yeah,
at least we have a job now.
Well, yeah. Right? I mean, I think...
You guys quit your jobs to try politics.
I was now about to say I have a new job. I did have a job, but I have a new job. And... it's an exciting job, yeah. I must say. I think that...
in the economic hub of Africa.
Absolutely. If you had asked me a year ago whether this particular portfolio would have been my first choice, I wouldn't have said, this is my first choice. But after just, you know, the last week, immersing myself in
really?
What this portfolio is about and what the possibilities are.
I wanted to talk about that. Give me a second.
I'm very excited.
Give me a second. I can't wait to talk about that. But and I want you to hang around. You know, maybe there could be more beneficial cases that I throw your way. but tell me about the appointment, though. Was it a call? Was it text? You know, a telegram? Did he send a friend? How did this...
You know, I was actually out of the country.
Well, that is why you didn't attend the announcement.
That's why I didn't attend the announcement. I was out of the country. I actually left that morning,
which
just also shows you that it wasn't on my agenda. I wasn't sitting there waiting for my name to be called. So I wasn't accessible. And so our leader, our national leader, Songhe Zozibi, is the one who actually received the call, tracked me down, got a hold of me as soon as I was back online and asked me if I would be willing to take on the role, to which I immediately said, absolutely not. But after some convincing, you know, for a few minutes and really just making me, reminding me why we started this journey and why we chose to leave our jobs and come here. He reminded me that, you know, we said we want new leaders. And now here's an opportunity to lead and to demonstrate what we can do when given some chance. And he convinced me. And so I then replied with a yes, and he was then able to close the deal.
The deal. Marpanya do horopile, man. I mean, agriculture mo Gauteng. No, Gauteng for me, it's like you know, getting agriculture here is like someone getting a MEC for fisheries in the Free State.
Well, not really. Yeah. And I think that is actually the misconception that even I had some time ago. What I have now come to know is that, one, agriculture is an entire industry. You know, it's an entire value chain. That's just number one. So if you look at, you know, fresh produce and the volumes of trade that happen in South Africa as a country, the majority of that happens in Gauteng. Mm-hmm. Joburg Market, Tshwane Market are the biggest, you know, markets in the country where fresh produce is traded. All of the big organizations, agricultural-based organizations, are based here in Gauteng.
In fact, before you continue, Premier Poppy Ramatuba was decrying the fact that the biggest tomato maker drops not a single tomato in Limpopo.
Yeah.
Once they're done, they get onto the track.
They get onto the track and they come here. And that's my point, is saying the actual opportunity here may not necessarily be in the, you know, the large tracts of land and that aspect of agriculture. But in saying that, by the way, farming itself is also not out of the question.
Mm.
Size doesn't always determine success.
I've heard that before.
and if you look at countries that are actually very efficient with agriculture, the likes of the Netherlands is one of the top agricultural countries. Israel, as well, is known as a top a net exporter of agricultural products and a leader in terms of exporting technology and efficiencies around agriculture. And that's where Gauteng actually has a massive opportunity. Some of the big educational institutions, your TUTs and various other institutions, that is where the top minds in the agricultural industry are trained. So I think what it all starts with is a perception change, number one, and looking at this industry in its multi-dimensions, not simply to say all of us must now put on our car keys and get on tractors and be small-scale farmers. I think we must expand our own thinking about what's possible in the sector. I'm not even talking, we haven't even arrived yet at the manufacturing part, because there's a massive agro-processing industry as well. And as you'll know, there's special economic zones that have already been carved out for agro-processing. Now, the conversations we need to be having is saying, how do we become, you know, not just a South African hub of agro-processing, but continental hub of agro-processing and export out to the continent. And I think it requires a dynamic way of thinking about the industry, and I'm excited for that challenge.
You know, you seem to me, and I'm sure you're being very genuine and you've done your studies, but it's like speaking up something that nobody takes seriously, so that we now have to take seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, maybe there's Western area and maybe there's, you know, whatever is on the border between us and Paris, whatever that place is, where one can even talk about rural development. But I can't think of Gauteng and rural development.
It is. It is hard to put those two things, and I get that. When we, you know, Gauteng is the most, if not one of the most urban parts of our country. Yeah. But in saying that, we also still have huge challenges of urban sprawl, whereby, you know, the infrastructure development is concentrated actually in very specific areas. So your urban nodes and township areas are the ones that are the most densely populated and have the highest levels of urbanization. The peripheries of Gauteng are actually largely rural, if we're honest, both from an infrastructure perspective, but also in terms of the economies of a lot of those areas. And so what ends up happening, because you'll know we come from the migrant labor era, etc. And I think last time I was here, I might have even spoke about that. People are forced to travel for an hour or 2 hours to go into the city or go into an area to go and find economic opportunities. But that shouldn't be the case. We must be able to think about how do we create these microeconomic nodes, even on the peripheries of our city. And I believe agriculture can be a massive catalyst for that.
So, but you know, most of your office is a bit cursed. I mean, you know, your predecessor is still in the news for using the budget to promote yourself. I don't necessarily believe in that. I even wrote about it. You know, your premier created something called the Green Army. He's about to go proud now because he's getting dumped into the dustbin of history and time. Aren't you worried that you're given something that nobody would have wanted to touch anyway?
No. I mean, I think, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, and the gift of an entrepreneur is to see opportunity where other people perhaps see crisis or where other people see nothing, quite frankly. And that has been actually my gift my whole life, is to see things that other people don't see. And I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I'm saying it really starts with having a vision and being able to see those opportunities so that you can make them come to life. Mm-hmm. And it also speaks to, you know, the and I'm not commenting on any of my predecessors or any such.
Don't leave that to us.
It's not up to me to comment on what worked or didn't work, but I'm saying I know what I can bring to this portfolio. And if you followed my, anyone who's followed my career has seen that I'm no stranger to challenges, and I have a tendency to take on the jobs that nobody else wants, because it does give me a deep level of satisfaction to be able to build something out of nothing. And I think this is a great opportunity for that.
Huh. This is PR. So, what does this mean for RISE? And I'm going to qualify the question.
Yeah.
At least in the National Assembly, I know of a few people who were the only MP for their party. They got appointed either to lead a committee or to become a minister. And the result was the death of the party because they had no time to do party work.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think the benefit of RISE, just as a starting point, is that we have never been a one-man band. We, even from our launch, we launched with a leadership collective. At the time, I think it was about 15 individuals who were standout leaders in their own rights in the various spaces from where they came. And those are the people who are the engine room of RISE. Today, our National Leadership Collective sits at 26 people all over the country, but many of whom are actually based right here as well in Gauteng. And that helps because the party work doesn't stop. We are able to, it's like, I don't watch sports, but I'm going to make a sports analogy. Please don't judge me. But I imagine it's like a soccer team. You know, everybody stands in the position in which they are required to be. And some of us are in executive roles. Maybe we are there being strikers. Others are there playing defense. Others are on the bench waiting to replace when it happens. So I think that's the benefit and the beauty of having a cohort of leaders who are all capable and able to, you know, self-manage and self-lead.
I know you don't watch sport because you called it soccer. It's actually football.
Football, ish.
It's actually football. It's okay, I forgive you. Let's change subjects.
Yeah.
I remember you promised if you were premier that you know, one of the things you wanted to do to clean up this province, you said it was dirty. Not that it's not, but you said it was dirty. I know it's dirty. And now you're finding yourself in an office in the middle of the JHB CBD. I can't find a dirtier and more dangerous space than that. I mean, it's almost like a street in Afghanistan, right?
Ah, that's harsh.
Have you been to Afghanistan?
I have not, but yeah. I have been to the JHB CBD, and it's actually a lot better than you think.
Now you're singing for your lunch.
I'm not. In fact, let's make a time and a date.
I've been to the office that you are in now.
On Main Street.
Recently, like late last year.
Main Street is actually gorgeous.
I wore two bulletproof vests.
Yeah. Okay, well,
because I was walking.
I suppose some of us, you know, given I'm a child of Hillbrow, I was born in Hillbrow, so maybe there are things I don't see. But to me, I think there are definitely parts of the city that are very rundown. That's a given.
Yeah.
But I also think there are pockets of beauty and excellence in the city. Marshalltown, for example, is a really great part of town. Your Main Street kind of walkway area, beautiful part of town. We must go for coffee there one of these days.
Well, if the fellow's company is coming to pick me up, I'll come. What are the top five things that you're looking to work on, at least in your term? That's if he doesn't call you next week and say the DA have decided to come back, so I wanted to leave.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, obviously we are in a new era of multi-party governance. We are in a government of provincial unity. So what that means is that nobody really gets to implement their manifesto top to toe, you know, but we are able to bring in some of our ideas, and I am able in particular, and that's why I said it's quite serendipitous, because you will know one of the core issues that we were championing as Rise Mzansi was the issue of ending hunger and the massive issue of hunger that goes unspoken about. You know, where a quarter actually of our citizens are hungry. We just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And we championed this issue. And as it turns out, you know, my portfolio, that is squarely in the mandate of this portfolio. So I think the number one priority is saying, how do we now operationalize that? Mm. Ending hunger is kind of like one of those big, hairy, audacious goals. But there are very practical, implementable steps to how we can address that. So, for example, one of the things we've spoken about is localizing food production. And you know, enabling whether it's small-scale farmers or even subsistence home farming, and supporting that so people can feed themselves. You know, you shouldn't have to have a salary to be able to eat food. You shouldn't have to be enrolled in school. I support school nutrition programs, but I'm saying even if you are not in school, you are worthy and entitled to eat. It's a basic human right. And so we need to decouple the right to eat from everything else and just deliver that. Number two is also, food waste. It's a really low-hanging fruit. Across the board, whether it's food waste coming straight from the farmers or from, you know, the other downstream parts of the value chain, so the retail sector, the hotel and entertainment kind of sector, there is massive food waste. And really what we need to be able to do is coordinate that and say, how do we then aggregate all of that food that's already there and get it to where it needs to be?
So we actually don't necessarily need lots of new food to maximize on the food that's already on the table.
There's already a lot of food already there. And so what are those sort of logistical and regulatory changes that need to be made to create efficiencies there? Because the problem right now is inefficiency. So those are some low-hanging fruits, right? But of course, we have to also think bigger. We have to think longer term. And the beauty now of being in this role is being able to look at the state as a potential lever and catalyst and a player in the agricultural market. Mm. And I'm not saying just as running government programs. Government programs are important, but I'm saying how do we then use the influence and the power and the scale of the state to influence how we want the market to behave. That's actually the conversation now we need to be having. And we do that, for example, because government procures food.
Biggest buyer of anything.
Yeah. Government procures food at all levels.
Yeah.
For every single part, you know, for many different parts, whether it's the school feeding programs, da da da. But
and
yet
the, and the lunches for the politicians.
Correct. But yet the government has no stake in any part of the value chain
other than at the end point, whereby we are issuing tenders and people are charging however much they're charging for school nutrition programs. That is, in my opinion, you know, a failure to adequately leverage the power of the state to be able to make a change. So I'm saying we should be able to sit down with the private sector, with the various, you know, players in the industry to say, guys, we have a national problem. The problem is hunger. You guys have excess stock. How can we as government assist in making it easier for you to get the excess from point A to point B? Number two, we need to ensure that food is affordable because cost of living is a problem. We cannot have, you know, market pricing of food. We remember Tomato Gate. Remember when there was that crisis and tomatoes were suddenly like 10 times the price.
Yeah.
We can't have that. Yeah. So in many developmental states, particularly in a lot of the Asian countries, even in the US, by the way, which is actually a social market economy, if we're honest. If you look at the US, they have things like food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Food stamps are essentially subsidized.
Agriculture is highly subsidized product, in the US.
Highly.
Highly.
So those are subsidized product lines. Yeah. Wherein there's a direct relationship with the retailers and with right down to the producers to say, we need certain pricing on this product line and we need to be able to supply it to the end user at a certain price. And we as government will subsidize that through food vouchers. And those are the types of things that we as Rise Mzansi had been championing, but we now have an opportunity to actually implement. And so I'm looking forward to doing those types of things.
One of the most talked about subjects in your area now has always been from 1994 and before transformation, right? Mm. And I'm not so much talking about land distribution and stuff like that, but the fact that the face of agriculture is still seen as a white face and more so white Afrikaans male face.
Sure.
How much of that is going to be something you look at?
I think that must be top of the agenda. And we mustn't shy away from the land redistribution conversation. It has to be in the center. You can't talk agricultural transformation without talking about land reform and redistribution. And so, you know, the first step towards doing that is actually understanding what land we have. We don't, as it stands right now, we don't have an accurate asset register of what land exists. What is it zoned for? Who does it belong to? What size is it? What is it best for? So as a country, I'm saying nationally, we actually don't have a strategy around land use, which is actually the conversation we should be having. It's land use and saying, where are we now, 30 years into our democracy? We have certain part. We have urban settlement and what you would call urban migration challenges. People need a place to live. What is the best land use to ensure that people actually have a place to live? And then secondly, people need to eat. And how does then government use its power to ensure that we can distribute the land properly and have it, you know, used more efficiently? And so those are the things that we have to look at. And that is also, by the way, one of the priorities. You asked five. I only gave you two so far.
Yeah, two are good. But,
but I was saying, actually ensuring that we have an accurate asset registry and a full understanding of what land exists, what is owned by the state, what is privately owned, what is occupied, what is zoned for what, so that we can start to develop a strategy. And I think there's a lot of untapped goodwill in this sector. And even amongst, let me call it, the traditional landowners, where I think we don't often maximize is in our ability to engage constructively.
Mm.
Whether it's with the private sector, whether it's with individual landowners, there's a lot of unnecessary fear-mongering and politicking when it comes to topics that actually are of national interest. And I think there's a level of maturity required in navigating this conversation. I'm not saying I'm the messiah who'll come and fix land reform, but I'm saying my experience thus far, and I've been actually doing work in the space of, you know, urban spatial transformation, land reform transformation. I've been in that space for almost a decade. And I've met with a number of stakeholders in that space. And I know that there's a lot of good
By the way, for the record, this is the first time you use the word stakeholder. I was about to say, you're not ready for politics because you've never.
I haven't used
that. This is the first time you just used the word stakeholder. You've been saying role players.
Okay, so I'm official now.
Now you're a politician. Welcome.
You are crazy. You know, so no, but I mean, anyway, how do I, I'm trying to get back on track here, Ren.
Well, you say you've been in this space for a while and you've made a lot of stakeholders.
Yeah, no, like, but it is true, you know, and I'm saying, fortunately, I have actually been in this space for some time, and I know that goodwill and that will is there, but we have to be able as government to lead that conversation in a constructive way. And I think, I think the time is actually ripe for that.
But let's be honest, this it's a male in African space.
Of course
white
it is.
African. Not only are you black, you female, you dark skinned. How's your Afrikaans?
Baie goed. No, ek praat net 'n bietjie. No, you know what? It is. Yeah. It is, and that is just the reality that we are confronted with. But I think that, you know, that is the country that we inherited.
Yeah.
Our role and the not just mine, but I'm saying the role of leadership and the role of political leadership is to be able to navigate us to a new reality, right? And I think there have been some pockets of success. There have been. But indeed, I think the transformation project at a national level has also been very flawed. Mm. The approach has been flawed. We must concede and admit that. And we must be willing to say, we must actually be willing to rethink the approach to transformation and how we, you know, reconceptualize a model of transformation that actually delivers. 30 years in, Rams, we can't still be talking about 7%. We only owned 2% of the JSE.
Well, I wanted to warn you that as you do that registry, you're going to find that you could offend some of the people who offended you, appointed you, because they own some of that land. But that's not the point of this conversation.
No, but mind you, that is, we mustn't tiptoe around that. The state is indeed a massive landowner. And
well, I meant in this case some individuals who are politicians.
Oh, individuals.
Have appropriated the land to themselves.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm saying we have all the laws available to us. We have all the institutions are there. We can do it. But I think what we need to be, we just need to do it. That's long story short. We just need to do it. But the start of doing it is understanding what we're working with and having a solid plan of what we then plan to do with it. And the state can absolutely lead that process. We have a lot of land. We have a lot of land, even within the Gauteng province that is landless. Our smallanyana little province. We ourselves also have a lot of land. We have a lot of property. And we just need to use it better.
I'll tell you where you are lucky as compared to your counterparts in other provinces. There's another constituency, stakeholder, that you would have had to deal with that I suspect you won't have to deal with. Traditional leaders, where people of your making are normally left outside because they're not supposed to be in the room with men and discuss issues of land and stuff like that.
No, that's true.
You may have missed that bullet.
That's true. But you know what, Rams, if we live our lives being defined by all the rooms we're not supposed to be in, some of us wouldn't be here right now.
No, this room you're always allowed to be in.
No, you know what I mean. And I think that's an ongoing struggle, even in just being in politics, you know, being young, being female, speaking English in a certain way sometimes excludes you.
I know. I know from other people's experience, I don't speak English in a certain way.
And I think we must not allow ourselves to be defined by those things.
As I said, you are a company that I don't want you to be pulled out of here. I promise 30 minutes. So as we conclude, you know, there's something called, before we get to Mike, there's something I'm sure now you know about the MinMec, you know, the MECs and the minister.
Yes. I mean,
you'll be in the room with John Steenhuis.
Yes, no, me.
Have you fathomed that?
I have.
Didn't make it to John Steenhuis.
I have, and I look forward to it, to be honest, because I think this is now the new normal. Yep. The new normal is you will be working across party lines. You'll be working. I mean, I am part of a cabinet of people who I'm not in the party with, you know, and we have to be able to find each other.
Yeah.
So it's no different. And I think if we can all just focus on the thing we all wake up to do, which is serve the people of South Africa, we can get far.
Before I came to speak to you here, I was doing an interview. I do a show on the television, Business Day TV, and I interviewed a young man who makes customized apparel and stuff. I think he must make you fail school. You're going to need them as you go out
yes.
there.
Yes, please give me those details.
Truly, truly wish you all the best. And officially, you don't know this. Even though I've been doing this thing for 1.5 years, you're the first politician in office to be in this studio.
Look at that.
Yeah.
I feel deeply honored. Thank you, Rams.
Things work for a reason. Thank you, MEC Vuyiswa Ramakgopa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Taking the Rams by the Horns. Download the My Sowetan app and listen to more of my podcasts. We are also on Spotify. Follow us on X at Rams by the Horns and at Sowetan Live. Please send your comments to me via email on rams@ramsmabote.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Or better still, let me be your MC, keynote speaker, or facilitator at your next event. It is the only thing I can do better than satire and sarcasm. From me, Rams Mabote, good night and God bless.